This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
It brought back!
You put that howling down there and go to bed.
Yes, I want my girls out here.
You shut up. You're going to get the law on you.
Stella!
You can't beat on a woman and then call her back because she ain't going to come. You're going to have a baby.
Listen, you're
I hope they haul you in and turn a fire hose on you like they've done last
time. Down here.
You stink.
Hey, Stella! Hey, Stella!
BFM 89.9, it's 7:37, and you're listening to The Stellas on Popcorn Culture tonight. Or rather, you're listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, joined, of course, as always, by Shyamala Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. And in case that, you know, Marlon Brando's impassioned pleas into the sky wasn't a clue as to what we're talking about tonight, we wanted to discuss male stars. And I think male actors and the way they portray masculinity on screen and have done for decades and how that's shifting and changing.
Mm, and I think anyone who watched Marlon Brando in A Streetcar Named Desire will realize that that kind of masculinity is not something we see on screen at all anymore, and certainly not in a way that's viewed as aspirational. And while, you know, Stanley Kowalski was not really someone to look up to in that sense, he also did set a whole tone in terms of appealing to a certain generation of young men. And I think...
And women,
that's true. What to desire for and what to desire to be. And I think that's what this whole idea of what masculinity looks like on screen, why it's so fascinating, right? Because it's not just about men being on screen, it's also about changing the way we think about what masculinity means.
I think you could do a whole supercut about Marlon Brando and masculinity just for him, and just to study how it has changed, like over the years and over the movies and stuff, different portrayals and different ways of showing that on screen. But it is very interesting also how you can sort of draw a diagram or chart or one of those, you know, those evolution charts with different actors from different decades, just to show people what masculinity and the face of the male star, how it has changed and how that reflects not just Hollywood, but also the people who are watching Hollywood films. It goes both ways, I think. It's like a mirror for the people who are buying tickets for the movies, but also for the people who are making movies and like what they understand about the audience that's watching it.
Mm. And that is especially interesting because, of course, as we're seeing with, for example, the not just Me Too, but this idea of representation in cinema, which is something that we spoke about recently, right? The thing is that in terms of who puts bums in seats, who sells tickets, who is the face that you want to put on a poster, you want to put above the title of the movie, traditionally, I think this idea of who sells has always been the male star. You know, you're always talking about who's bankable. And it's and this idea, there is a quote that is too crude to say that is about the female actress, right? This idea of how in middle age, essentially, once they pass, I don't know, between 30 to 60, when they can't be somebody's girlfriend or mother, that they're, you know, for the longest time, there weren't roles. But men has not, that has not been the case for men. In terms of the stories that we watch on screen, whether we're watching them in, you know, Ferris Bueller, teenage comedy, that sort of thing, whether we're seeing them in relative middle age, still totally guns and running around, or into their dotage when they get to play people in their dotage. You know, there are a lot of stories about men and a lot of male stars to discuss.
And I mean, just look at, Marlon Brando was in the 50s, but not a lot has changed, even in terms of if you just take a romantic lead. If you take someone who, like a Cary Grant, who was, you know, maybe a decade or so before Brando, all the way to a Clooney today, you can be a nearly nearly 60-year-old man romancing a 20-something-year-old woman, and that's fine. But if you flip that, or even if you age up the woman, it becomes a different sort of story. It's no longer just a romance. It's a statement. And I think that in itself is very telling in terms of how... what you said, Arvind, I mean, a lot of this is a reflection of norms we already hold in life, and that's often reflected on the screen as well. It is changing, but I feel like I'd like to see that change so that it's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah, if it is a big deal, I mean, if they flip it, then it becomes like an indie film that goes on to win like awards because it's the once in a blue moon
thing. It's a Tilda Swinton star, is what you're saying.
It's a Tilda Swinton. Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. It's like the unique offbeat film. But yeah, it's I think also it is sort of not weird, but interesting how they can sort of headline even without having a romantic angle. So you mentioned, like, you know, George Clooney and all the headliners, right? He could be in his 70s and still headline a film.
Like Clint Eastwood.
It has like a leading... Like Clint Eastwood, yeah. And then there are stories to be written for them and sort of like, you know, scripts that are given to them to headline these films. I'm thinking a lot about Liam Neeson because you mentioned, like, you know, middle-aged guys who go on to make action films. There was a whole surge of middle-aged action superstars who came back to make movies, especially after The Expendables. They're like a whole boom. So you had to be above the age of like 45, 50 to be able to be on the poster for these films, which in itself is a whole other thing to explore.
So before we move on, right, Marlon Brando, we started the show with him because, like you said, Sharmila, for a time he was this emblem of masculinity, him in that famous white T-shirt in that Stella scene is actually one of those indelible movie images that people think about often. And you're right in that perhaps, you know, that exact template is not what people look for anymore, but the tortured macho man is definitely something that we still see today. And we also see actors continuing to extol the virtues of Marlon Brando, continuing to say that Marlon Brando is an inspiration to them, that they look to him. And so I think, again, while we're going to talk about the evolution and how things have changed, the archetypes that were set out in the form of your Marlon Brandos, your Cary Grants, your Gregory Pecks, I think that they are still... You can actually see direct echoes, right? Cary Grant, George Clooney. Mm-hmm. You mentioned them earlier, but they are also the same. Yes. You know, in many ways, they're the same kind of actor. And I think we're going to be seeing that, you know, and talking about that a lot through the show.
I think it's really interesting also, right, that something that is very much a product of a particular time, your, you know, the Marlon Brando archetype, the James Dean archetype, they were direct contrast to what came before. They were an anti-Cary Grant. They're no longer interested in being the establishment, urbane, debonair types. They are the, I hate what my parents did to this world. And so actually in that way, you're right. That's a very millennial, zennial way of wanting to rebel against what came before. The world is broken and you've left me a broken world. I think that in a weird way, some of these things do come around, perhaps in different forms, though.
Do you think that's going to come around again, like after this? Because I don't, like, personally, I don't see the George Clooney type coming back in a big way anytime soon. I think that sort of, it's been gone for about 15, 20 years now. It's been dwindling. The new stars, even though, like, they look a certain way, like they look a Hollywood way, I don't think they're able to sell purely on the fact that they look like they have this certain physique, like they look like a George Clooney. I think there's a lot of things that you have to add on, which is also a product of the people watching the movies. I don't think people buy into those archetypes as much anymore. Not to say that there's no demand, but it's a lot less than it used to be, I think.
There's still a comfort to it, though. I mean, not George Clooney, but I think of Gerard Butler's movies and how he's essentially making one movie, just, you know, over and over again with different directors. And there is a sort of security blanket comfort to knowing what you're going to get with a certain type of star and sometimes a certain type of male star, especially when it comes to action movies, which is what we're talking about after this. But we started off with Marlon Brando, who is a certain type of masculine, muscular actor. And we wanted to close off this segment, at least, with another type of Hollywood star that for a time really dominated the screen. And that was somebody who could sing, dance, act,
the triple threat.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps not better exemplified or, you know, rarely exemplified better than Gene Kelly. So here we go.
I'm singing in the rain. You're singing in the rain. What a glorious feel. And I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Now don't take this the wrong way, but you are a Terminator, right?
Yes. Sabadan Systems Model 101.
Oh. You're like a machine underneath, right? But sort of alive outside?
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
Okay. You're not here to kill me. I figured that part out for myself. So what's the deal?
My mission is to protect you.
Yeah? Who sent you?
You did. 35 years from now, you reprogrammed me to be your protector here, in this time.
This is deep.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:48, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And together we're talking about male stars, male actors, our favourites, as well as just the way that our favourites are changing as the way masculinity is changing in terms of how it's portrayed on screen. And that was the entire plot of Terminator right there in that clip. And before we move on to talking about action stars, right, I just wanted to say, we closed off earlier with Gene Kelly. Did you guys know that he filmed that, that famous Singing in the Rain scene in the rain while having a fever?
No, I didn't know that. I knew the In the Rain part. I didn't know the fever part.
Why that, the fever though?
That is masculine.
No, yeah. I just wanted to bring it up because
method and masculine.
That's the thing. I just wanted to bring it up because he had a fever. Famously, he was actually kind of ill the day that he did that really lovely light scene where he's singing in the rain.
Take that, Arnold.
And I think that that's kind of fitting for today's show, where we're talking about this idea of what it means to be a male star, the kind of dedication. He also was a tough taskmaster on his co-star Debbie Reynolds in terms of dancing.
That I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So just wanted to toss that in there.
So it's interesting because how this idea of the singing dancing hero is really not someone, it's very much a throwback at this point. I mean, La La Land was all about the nostalgia of being one of those kinds of men.
But you know who does it really well is Hugh Jackman.
Yes, but Hugh Jackman also has Wolverine to kind of balance that out. You know, an actor who just made a career of doing that would, I feel, even in today's world, not really be viewed as an action star to aspire to the way, you know, maybe your Chris Evans's or Chris Hemsworth's are looked at. But I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is really interesting because that clip really had it all, right? It had the guns, it had the, this is how strong I am, it had the macho voice. And for a time...
The leather jackets.
Yeah, and for a time, like, that was just... that was all you got on screen, like especially in the sort of 80s, early 90s. That kind of action hero was completely what it meant to be a man.
Yeah. I feel like Hollywood sort of plucked the old-timey Hollywood stars and the Hollywood men and sort of said, we want more. And they kept saying that again and again until Arnold Schwarzenegger was born. Thinking out like, you know, we want more. We want like, we want taller. We want bigger. We want like more muscle. And until like the producers went, how much more muscle do you need? And then they stopped at Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then ever since they picked on that template, then you had like the Sylvester Stallones and the Dolph Lundgrens. But it was sort of like if you... In a very crude sense, if you put like the old-timey Hollywood stars on steroids, this is what you would get. You would get these action stars. And for a long time, that's what the action stars looked like.
I also, I think aside from the physicality of it all, right, there's also something about the impenetrability of these stars that I think is very important, because, you know, they might get hurt, they might fall from great heights, they might take a lot of lumps, but ultimately they're going to be just fine. And that is the template that we see not only in the literally big guys, a la your Schwarzenegger's, Stallone's, but also your Bruce Willis's. And I think that is something that we continue to carry through today. If I were to name somebody who I think is in this same mold and is continuing to work in this area without compromising on that, I am a star, I am you can't beat me, it's just unbeatable, I would think of names like Mark Wahlberg. I would think of names like Jason Statham. I think that these are weirdly the inheritors of the action star mantle, despite not being at all the same size.
But they're not taken in the same vein as they would have back then. Your Mark Wahlbergs and your Jason Stathams today, while they definitely appeal to a sort of a particular audience, and most of us will probably watch them for a fun kind of, you know, time, I feel like they've also cross the line into being slightly a parody of the genre themselves. It's kind of like a, you know what to get from a Jason Statham film, you know what to get from a Mark Wahlberg. But I also think that what's interesting is that the reason the Arnies and the Stallones existed at that time and then sort of evolved was also because the counterpoint to them were your quote-unquote, I don't know if beta males is really the way to describe them, but you had your Billy Crystals, for instance. Danny DeVito's, even your Tom Hanks that came at that time, they were not doing the action films. So on the one hand, you had the no emotions, all action. And then on the other hand, you had the sweet, sensitive, I want to be your friend, I care about falling in love. And that dichotomy is really interesting. And that line didn't cross very often either.
Yeah, and I think the ones that survived were the Tom Hanks and Billy Crystal types, because, you know, there are a lot of those sorts of leading men who are in Hollywood now. Whereas I think a good example of an action star that exists today, but isn't as bankable, even though he's the highest paid, is Dwayne Johnson. He makes the most money in Hollywood. Like, he is a template of an 80s, 90s Hollywood star, but his movies are not surefire hits. Like, you have to look at the story, you have to look at the marketing. It all depends on the kind of studio that pushes the film and how much money goes into, you know, those kinds of things. It's not like back in the day when you put Arnold on a poster, it's like you are definitely going to fill up cinemas in the first 2 weeks. So I think he's a good example of someone who looks like that but doesn't sell as much as the Stallones and the Schwarzeneggers used to back then.
I would argue, right? Firstly, I did want to say that there is something about Arnold Schwarzenegger that is quite versatile. I know that it's easy to forget that because, yes, you know, you think of him as purely Terminator, and then from there it's just difficult to think of anything else. But the man has also done a fair amount of comedy quite well.
Hey, I like Junior very much.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Junior is great. Last Action Hero.
Kindergarten Cop.
You know, he's done quite a bit of comedy. And I'm also thinking about whether it's important that someone has sex appeal. And because, of course, in Hollywood, I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, on the surface of it, you wouldn't necessarily think so. But then I'm also thinking of something like True Lies, which really worked, I think, in terms of selling him as a believable guy, you know, a guy who could presumably be in a relationship with other people. I don't get that from The Rock.
Really?
In the sense that The Rock does not necessarily play relationships. They're not important in his movies, you know? He doesn't kind of push himself in that way. And so in line with that, I'm thinking of someone like Jackie Chan, who also is, you know, this great action star, can do lots of things, but has sort of remained resolutely sexless. You know, is not interested in exploring romance or that sort of thing on screen.
I wonder if that's because up till maybe the 80s and even the early 90s, movies still largely had to appeal to a broader audience. But as time went on, you could actually just start making films that were more and more narrow. These films are just for the men. These films are just for the women. And we talked about this when we talked about romantic comedies, where we said that romantic comedies used to be made for everyone. But as time went on, they were made only for women, which significantly changed how their characters were written and developed. And I wonder whether that also happened with the action movies, because like you said, Arvind, there are many films where the only reason a woman has to exist is to be the love interest. Once the reason for that kind of disappeared, there was no need to develop that angle.
I don't know. I always thought it was because of the physique. I mean, I know it's very like surface level, but I always thought that the reason you can't believe The Rock's in like a relationship with a person is because of how big he is. And I don't like, I honestly, like, you know, watching like Schwarzenegger, you watch him in something like The Sixth Day. And back when I watched it, he wakes up like in a suburban home. He has like a suburban family. He sits down and he has cereal with his kids. But he is so larger than life, like physically and in every way, that you can't take him seriously in that role as a person who's just sending his kid to school. The same way you can't take The Rock seriously. So all of his movies, if you notice, have things that are bigger than he is, like an earthquake, like monsters, like oversized something, like Jumanji. A big gorilla, yeah. So he looks realistic in that role. So I don't know. I always thought it was because of how huge they are that you can't put them in like normal society and believe that they are existing with everyone else.
Oh my God, being literally larger than life. Can you believe it? All right.
Yes.
So we're talking today about masculinity on screen. And, you know, we've kind of addressed that through drama, through musicals, through action. And now we want to touch on or play a little clip of people just being suave, people just having swag. And that is what we're about to hear. But in the meantime, we're also going to dive into our favorites, right? Who is it that we think is doing a good job in this area? Who are some of our favorite male movie stars or television stars? Let us know yours, you know. Do you have any favorites? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
What?
I need a reason.
Don't say money. Why do this?
Why not do it? Because yesterday I walked out of the joint after losing 4 years of my life and your cold decking Teen Beat cover boys. Because the house always wins. Play long enough, you never change the stakes, the house takes you. Unless, when that perfect hand comes along, you bet big and then you take the house.
Been practicing this speech, hadn't
you? A little bit, did I rush it? It felt like I rushed
it. No, it was good, I liked it. Teen Beat thing was harsh.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM. 89.9.
Did you sleep with him?
Jesus, God!
Yeah, probably.
What? You would? What? What are you even saying?
You see what just happened, Count? As soon as you opened your mouth, Tiffany started doubting whether she wanted to sleep with you or not.
That's probably the meanest thing anyone's ever said to me.
No, this is... Your wife cheated on you because you lost sight of who you are as a man, as a husband, and probably as a lover.
You're right, that's meaner.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:07 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. And today we're talking about male stars, you know, male action stars, romance stars, just all of it. And we want to know your favorites. If you have an actor that you just love, let us know who it is and why. You can call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. So guys, we are officially in the modern day. You know, we went from Brando to Gosling. Who wants to go?
I feel like that's such a great clip. And I think it's particularly telling that we went also from Clooney and Pitt in Ocean's 11 to Gosling kind of being like the parody of those two guys to poor Steve Carell. It's just... And it's such a great example of how these tropes are played out on screen, right? Because I mentioned earlier how you had the Billy Crystals of the 80s. I mean, Steve Carell is pretty much the beta male extraordinaire of the 2000s. He's a great actor. He does it really well. But I think that characters like that actually do a lot to show men, especially now, that there isn't just one way to be a guy. And even Ryan Gosling himself plays his character with the awareness that that uber sexualized male is not necessarily the only thing to aspire to. And I think that's something that I like watching. I like that dynamic a lot.
It's like he's making fun of himself in a way. Ryan Gosling always does that. But also, you know, the funny thing is, in those two, like Steve Carell and Ryan Gosling, Steve Carell is the more profitable superstar or star in Hollywood. Like, he's the the mega producer, he's the writer, the creator. And he, you could sort of bank on him to make a lot of money in your movies, opposed to Ryan Gosling, who you are not, you're only like 50-50. Like, the movie might sell, the movie might flop, people might not go out to see it. So I think that's very telling. If Ryan Gosling was born maybe 50 years ago, he would sell, like, you know, every seat in the cinema for like 3 weeks. Steve Carell wouldn't be able to do the same thing. You flip it around and Steve Carell's the biggest star. Also, when we were so off air, we were talking about Chris Pratt yesterday because he's been in the news like a lot. And I realized that I said that one of my favorite scenes or descriptions of him is in Infinity War. So Dave Bautista is talking to Chris Pratt. He says Chris Pratt is a dude compared to Thor, who he calls a man, quote unquote. And I was thinking, like, if you take that scene, you can sort of draw a trajectory of Hollywood with those three people, because like Chris Hemsworth would be the old timey Hollywood star selling at one time. Dave Bautista would have been the star in the 80s and 90s. And Chris Pratt is today's star. Like, you can look a certain way, but you need to have like humor and you need to be like vulnerable. You need to have a sort of depth to sell your films. And in those three, ironically, Chris Pratt is the more profitable star. Like, he sells more movies.
That's interesting, because I read Chris Pratt as quite old-fashioned. I think Chris Hemsworth, and now we're just getting into the Chris's, but I feel as if Chris Hemsworth has showcased versatility, because he's done drama, he's done comedy, and he's done the whole superhero Thor thing. And so he has that kind of range, whereas Chris Pratt, I think, is best served as Andy Dwyer or as Jurassic Park guy, whose name I don't recall. Jurassic World
Owen
guy.
Owen something.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah. I can do the clicks, but I can't tell you his name. And I think that that's kind of indicative of who he is as an actor. He is a certain type of star. It sits within that. Whereas I feel as if we're moving increasingly towards people kind of being whatever, people moving away from having those specific boxes. So your Adam Drivers, your Robert Pattinsons, these are the stars who are going to constantly surprise you, do strange things. And profitability is an interesting question, because we're increasingly also talking about streaming. So how we gauge that, I think, is going to keep changing.
And it's really interesting, right? Because if you take your Chris's, Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth, who are both great examples of that yesteryear movie star mold, and we talked about them in our movie star episode a while ago, they're not really at the level of movie stars that can carry entire movies. And I think it's very telling that outside of the Avengers franchise, all of the films they've done, they've either poked fun of themselves, so they've played very good-looking, desirable men, but they're funny, like Chris Hemsworth did in Ghostbusters, for instance, or Chris Evans did in
we really are in the Chris's.
Yeah, we are. But my point is, I think that a Chris Pratt can actually sort of be himself and make films and make 100 films, and there is space for people to identify with him and watch him. Whereas a Chris Hemsworth or a Chris Evans in today's landscape need to work harder to make movies that appeal beyond just, well, I look like this, so I deserve to headline a film. And I think that's an interesting shift.
So we've been asking,
where do you think that turning point? Sorry. I was going to ask, where do you think that turning point happened? Like, why does the turning point happen?
Post Tom Cruise, maybe? Because I feel like, I mean, we constantly talk about him as the last big movie star. I think he's the only one for a while now that I can think of that kind of has that. He's really good looking, can carry a film, and doesn't play the everyman. Because everyone else just tries to play the everyman in some way. Otherwise, people lose the relatability factor.
I was going to name Tom Hanks. But yeah, Tom Cruise, I think. One of the Toms.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, Tom Cruise is so against playing the everyman character that he went for Jack Reacher, who is at least two heads taller than him, you know, as a character. And so that just goes to show you how unwilling he is to. And I don't think he can, actually.
No.
He's so much a product of that 80s star machine that I don't know if he knows any other way of being.
And I'm fine with that,
to be
honest.
Yeah, that's fine. It's not a critique. It's more an observation. So we've been asking
Well.
We've been asking you for your favorites, about who you think is a great Hollywood male star in particular, since that's the focus of today's show. And we do have this on Twitter from Azmi, who simply says Robert De Niro.
Oh, interesting. And yes, I think him and Al Pacino were sort of that double bill of in the 70s, I think. That very hot-headed Italian.
Super intense.
Intense gang.
Can you imagine them in The Lighthouse, though?
Oh my God, I would pay good money to watch the both of them in The Lighthouse. I really would.
I'm so scared for my life just imagining it. My sanity would melt away. We also have a bunch of people weighing in on WhatsApp. So we have Zaf, who's saying, Chow Yun-fat, FYI, I'm Malay, by the way. And just thank you so much for sending that, because whenever I think about a big movie star, just somebody who I think of as across generations and across different cultures, Chow Yun-fat always comes to mind. I mean, he's not as active as he used to be, but he's just immense. He's such a great, you know, kind of iconic star.
I think there's a lot of conversations to be had, and I think probably a supercut on its own on sort of the outside Hollywood idea of masculinity and what makes a film star. And often I notice that they have a lot longer shelf life than even in Hollywood.
I think it's because they don't get typecast, or they don't get like shoved into a role like 12 times in 12 years. So they have like they exist for a lot longer.
Mm.
And then Lok says, I love Jim Caviezel, but I don't know why he's hardly seen anymore. And that's true. That's a name that I haven't heard in a very long time.
That's right. I can't remember the last thing I saw him in, to be honest.
I'm pretty sure it's a movie that was banned in Malaysia. That was the last one that I saw him in anyway. And he was really indelible in that role.
Mm. I remember him in the film with Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
The one where it's a sci-fi futuristic one. The name's not coming to me. But yeah, and you know, that's a great suggestion, because he looks like he'd make a great film star. He's good looking, he's brooding. But no, just one of those that I think just slipped through the cracks.
It's like John Hamm. Like, why is John Hamm not a huge star?
John Hamm is interesting because I don't think he wants to be a huge star. I think he wants to play against his type.
Because his type is, you know, 1940s Hollywood, which is also, yeah, you know, why he was so great as Don Draper. We have this from Jason, who says, all right, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, only he can play his role. We see his real character on screen.
Mm. That is true. Yes.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's the only role he plays. Yeah.
You know, I read once a director of his talking about how they had to be careful about when they allow The Rock to smile on screen. And they said it's because he has such a winning smile that it actually diffuses the tension. And so they actually kind of pace themselves, you know, according to when it is that they'll allow him to unleash that The Rock face. And I think it's the same as with his eyebrow. And that tells you a lot about somebody as a star, and in terms of how, I guess, macho they can be, that, you know, they have to have a certain level of macho-ness, and a smile ruins it all.
And when it comes to this idea of masculinity, I mean, if you want to play that role, I think a lot of his off-screen persona actually feeds into that. He's not pretending to be that guy on screen. Most of us could believe that he could be that guy on screen.
I mean, in like Jumanji, he literally does a thing called the smolder. Like that's his superpower. So yeah, I think he feeds into his own brand. He understands his brand. Mm. He understands who he is.
And we also have Morris saying, I love this. Definitely Ron Swanson in Parks and Recreation.
Oh,
a great display.
Inspired choice.
A great display of a male character. And I love the bringing up of Ron Swanson, Nick Offerman in the role, of course, because he looks a certain way, talks a certain way, wants to eat meat, chop wood, but also supports his female subordinate, you know, for promotions, and is also just kind of a really cool, supportive person in general. And I love the layers that they managed to build in that character.
Yes, and I think he's almost the anti sort of the stuff they talk about in Fight Club, you know, the men becoming demasculinized, men not having a space in the world. Ron Swanson, in a weird way, makes a great case for how you can be quote-unquote traditional man, not that that's what you have to be, while also actually being a really decent person.
I never thought I would hear like Ron Swanson and Fight Club in the same sentence, but right. Now I want to see that movie, like him show up in that situation. But I wanted to just say that mustache. I don't think a lot of people can pull off a mustache like that, other than maybe like Burt Reynolds.
Tom
there
Selleck.
Are only a few people who can pull. Tom Selleck, yeah, for sure, can pull off that look.
It's a look.
Yeah,
it very much
and,
is.
And for a while, a very masculine look.
Keep those thoughts coming. We want to know who your favorite actors are, male actors in particular, because today we're just talking about the evolution of masculinity on screen. And like we said, we've gone from Brando to Gosling to Fight Club. We're going all over the place. Share your thoughts. You can call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're playing out this segment with another of, I suppose, the new breed of male actors in Hollywood.
I'm just looking to hire guys that I don't mind hanging out with for like 12 hours a day. You guys seem like cool guys. You got hair similar to mine. You wear tuxedos to the interview. That's funny. It's ironic. I get that. You're kind of underplaying the whole formality of it. I think that's funny as hell. So let's do this. You know, you guys are hired. You're in, you know, unless you're like the weirdest guys ever and I don't see it.
Great.
Was that a fart?
I don't know.
I can taste it. On my tongue.
Okay, I'll be honest with you. I did fart.
It stinks. And this is a small room. Okay, now the tuxedos seem kind of f***ed up.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
You know where I'm from. When black folks started revolutions, they never had the firepower or the resources to fight their oppressors. Where was Wakanda? You know how that ends today. We got spies embedded in every nation on Earth, already in place. I know how colonizers think, so we're gonna use their own strategy against them. We're gonna send vibranium weapons out to our war dogs. They'll arm oppressed people all over the world so they can finally rise up and kill those in power and their children. And anyone else who takes their side. It's time they know the truth about us. We're warriors. The world's gonna start over, and this time we're on top. The sun will never set on the Wakandan Empire.
BFM 89.9, it's 8:23 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Shyamalan Arvin, and we're talking about male movie stars or TV stars. We've had some brilliant recommendations coming in, and we started off, like we said, with Brando, you know, who in that same James Dean, Marlon Brando mold represents, you know, the golden age of Hollywood, I guess. Yes. The idea of what it meant then. And now we're all up to date with Michael B. Jordan,
who, you know, in his own way, brings the same amount of angst to his role in Black Panther. But I think Michael B. Jordan is also interesting because, and one of the challenges we had when we were working on clips and people to talk about is actually the stunning lack of non-white male representation in Hollywood, right? Especially when you're talking about the idea of archetypes.
So archetype is such a great word in this instance, because for the longest time, I think, in Hollywood, so I'm thinking of Antonio Banderas, who is wildly handsome, very talented, and also very masculine. But because of his roles like, you know, Desperado, I think he was definitely pigeonholed into Latin lover, you know, or just that very specific type of film. And you see that happen over and over again, too.
The closest I think we have is Will Smith, and Will Smith, of course, has, because he did action films, and because he did the path that maybe Denzel didn't choose to do, which is the action film, mass, you know, romantic comedies, and he's a rap star, so he had a lot of those things going on, and I think that helped. But really, beyond those, it has been largely quite white, and I think that's what's quite exciting about today, because if we look at Michael B. Jordan, if we look at even say a John Cho or John David Washington, there are a lot of ideas of masculinity that are not rooted in being white. And I think that's something that's quite important to point out.
So that goes back to what we said in the beginning, right, about how Hollywood is like a reflection of the people who are watching and how they get male stars to sort of reflect the people who are buying tickets and stuff and who's producing the film. So I think Michael B. Jordan is like a good product of something like that. He is like a producer in Hollywood. He is making his own stories. He is being pushed to the forefront. But at the same time, it's like, you know, maybe back then you had to look sort of like cartoonishly alpha to be a leading male star. And today you have to be diverse. You have to represent like different groups. You have to represent different people who are buying your tickets to be like a leading man in Hollywood.
Well, we do have this from Tenney, among a fairly long list, but how can you miss out Eddie Murphy? And that is a great point. I think the reason why we didn't bring up Eddie Murphy is because he doesn't particularly portray any sort of any male archetype. He's not a specific type of masculine, but you're absolutely right in that he was a runaway success for a time. You know, if I think about all the Beverly Hills Copses, all the various things that he's done, he was deeply bankable.
And he also actually fits into the comedian who plays the male lead, which is a different thing and on its own. It's almost like, yes, you can be the funny person who leads the film, but not necessarily the aspirational one that people look up to. I'm not saying he wasn't aspirational in himself, but in terms of how Hollywood chooses to position these things.
Yeah, I think he was also one of those trailblazers who sort of came out and showed people that you can be funny-ish, or you can have a sort of sense of humor when you are portraying like leading male stars. And I think he sort of opened up the doors for a lot of other people. We mentioned like Billy Crystal and Tom Hanks and stuff. It sort of those people allowed others like Steve Carell to get on the map, right? Because without them, then you'd have those same typecast sort of stereotypical male stars in Hollywood still, or sort of like dominating Hollywood still.
So just looking at the other names that came up from Tenney, he says Kevin Costner was a good one, Harrison Ford, Austin Powers, Mike Myers was great, Jason Statham, ultimate butt kicker, I think I can say. You know, Val Kilmer as Batman, and Jack Nicholson. So Jack Nicholson is also very interesting because he, I think, is the troubled male archetype. You know, he was a very intense actor for a long period of time. That was like his bread and butter.
But also just very well, but plays Jack Nicholson in every movie.
Eyebrows.
Yes. So I think Jack Nicholson, I don't know. I don't know what kind of masculinity Jack Nicholson falls under, except the Jack Nicholson kind, which in itself is something to be said, I think.
We also have Ling, who's very simply saying, I like Seth Rogen as the modern man. I think this is a good opportunity, Sharmila, for you to share your thoughts on Seth Rogen.
I was going to, off air when we went on break and we were listening to Seth Rogen, I was saying that I oddly find Seth Rogen very attractive. I would date him. And so I actually agree with whoever WhatsApped him.
Ling.
And thanks for that.
Yes, no worries. You should always trust me with things. We also have this fantastic observation from Ming, who is saying Chris Pratt is this generation's Brendan Fraser. And that is spot on. There's so many correlations. Oh, wow. I think you can point to that.
Yeah. He's like, Brendan Fraser is, I completely forgot about Brendan Fraser, and I wish that I didn't, because he was one of those guys who was so ahead of his time. I know that he's sort of missing now and he's not doing much. He's on Doom Patrol, I think, on HBO. But he was one of those people who could be an action star and be very, very, very funny at the same time. And he could alternate between like comedy and action and a bunch of other things that not a lot of people were doing in like the mid to late 90s.
I'm so impressed at that observation. And I feel like, yes, how did I not make that connection?
Yeah, especially because of that sort of goofy, self-effacing quality that they have, right?
Absolutely.
It's spot on. Maggie is saying, talking about believable heroes, it'll be Harrison Ford for me, starting from his Indiana Jones character. And the reason I chose him would be his ordinary looks and flaws, even when he's supposed to be the hero. I can't recall the names of his shows now, but even as an international spy. And we were speaking earlier about how it can be very difficult to believe sometimes in the everyman, in these ridiculously, to quote, you know, Zoolander, ridiculously, good looking. It's hard to believe that they fit into our ordinary little worlds, right? And Harrison Ford has that quality of being larger than life. He is Han Solo. He is the fugitive. He's the president. But you also believe that he is just a guy.
I do think, though, that that kind of man is someone that's always had a space in Hollywood. If you think of Humphrey Bogart, the gruff, not typically good looking, but can do everything really well and is the one you want in your corner. Harrison Ford is very much a continuum of that. Mm. And in a way to draw the comparison, the same does not exist for female stars. For female stars, how you look is a big part of who you get to play.
There's one Meryl Streep.
Yes. And even Meryl Streep is actually very good looking. So if you sort of looked at her when she was younger, she was as good looking as many of the other women acting on screen that day. But I do think that Harrison Ford is a great example of someone who actually has managed to kind of carry that stereotype or archetype to today's world, and I can't think of many others who play it like that anymore. Even your Adam Drivers, who's not like conventionally good looking, but he's much more of the indie hero, quirky type of man.
I like how you make the Harrison Ford Adam Driver connection. That yeah, was nice.
I know, right? I didn't think I was doing it, but clearly I'm conditioned.
Yeah, but do you think people go to watch Harrison Ford because of Harrison Ford, or do you think they go watch it because of his characters? Like, is it Indiana Jones and Han Solo, or is it because he has a Harrison Ford type? Like, he's the celebrity who doesn't care about the people that he's playing, or just doesn't care about Hollywood per se. So who are they going to watch, you think? The person or the character?
As somebody who has seen a fair amount of Harrison Ford movies, I go for Harrison Ford. Mm.
I think Star Wars is the only outlier there.
Mm.
I think Star Wars I would watch because it's Star Wars, but there is no Indiana Jones without Harrison Ford. And all of his other films, it's him.
I felt that. That was a strong statement. We have Sydney saying Sean Connery is a very cool actor.
Sean Connery is my favorite Bond. And Bond in itself is such a great example of how masculinity has evolved. Because if you compare Connery and Daniel Craig, that's two very different ideas of what it means to be a man. But essentially playing the same character within the same genre.
Oh, it circles back, because next is going back to Tom Hardy, right? So it's sort of like revolving around
Has it been confirmed?
Now Daniel Craig is the... I think almost. So you can see how that's become like the new template, the Daniel Craig template. And now it's like Tom Hardy and people who look somewhat like Daniel Craig-ish.
Again, just a very simple one. Jeff says Leonardo DiCaprio. And Leo is such a good actor, right? Like he is really somebody who takes on roles and commits to them all the way. And in terms of how he has transformed masculinity on screen, it's interesting because he was so boyish for such a prolonged period of time. And then once that ended, he just sort of cast it away and never looked back. He never wanted to be Romeo again.
So I think that if I were to think of Leonardo DiCaprio within this lens of masculinity, I would actually think of his earlier roles, because that heartthrob, the pre-Robert Pattinson, basically. And in fact, actually, now that I think about it, Pattinson's almost doing a Leo. He's also actively picking roles that don't play into that stereotype. His later roles have then just been vastly different. But in terms of masculinity, he did fit into that doe-eyed, beautiful boy that teenage girls fell for.
So we also, I think, I just wanted to close off by asking you guys. So we've been talking about male stars through the ages. Right this second, who are you excited about? Like who gets you, well, when we can go back to the cinema, who gets you to the cinema?
I think for me, it's a tie between, I'm going to be very, very cliched here, between Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans. And I think because there's a part of me that actually really likes the classical film star. And I like that they don't take it seriously. So I like watching them. I like watching them twist that role around and make it more than just I'm good looking.
For me, it's Adam Driver. It has to be. I'll watch anything Adam Driver does. There's something so magnetic about his performances and the way he pulls off his roles, because he doesn't look like your typical Hollywood guy. You know, the way he moves, the way he talks, everything about him is so unconventional, but it's also difficult to sort of look away because he's so good at everything that he does and he's so good at keeping you hooked. So for me, it has to be Adam Driver. Like today, Adam Driver for sure.
In a year where we haven't seen a lot of new stuff, I will say that the two people who really excite me are both people that we've spoken about recently. So Robert Pattinson is just becoming so exciting and weird and strange, and his performances are so good that And also, I like his off-screen personality. He's kind of funny. He's very British. So I enjoy Robert Pattinson a lot. And I've really, really liked John David Washington. Mm. So in both the movies that we spoke about him recently with, which was Tenet, as well as Black Klansman, I loved his screen presence. And so I think for me anyway, looking forward to, again, whenever it is that we manage to get new releases, these are the two that I'm really enjoying.
I think those are some great choices. And I think that's actually really representative of the kind of mix that we're working with in today's world. I want to pip for Michael B. Jordan as well. I think he's a lot more interesting off screen than I've seen in his roles so far. I love his Instagram-iness. I love how he does his magazine shoots. He's so stylish in the red carpet. So that's a different kind of masculinity. And I think he embodies that really well.
I don't know why whenever you put like two people together now, I'm just like, what would they be like in The Lighthouse? That's my thought pattern.
The
like,
movie has broken
John
us.
David Washington.
Reviewing it's, that it's movie really,
has like, it has. Whenever you mention like two people, I'm like, ooh, what would they do in like Lighthouse? And Robert Pattinson, like we know, but John David Washington and Robert Pattinson, that's like a Tenet Lighthouse crossover.
Which existed. He was in The Lighthouse in Tenet. Sorry, just saying that there is a whole scene involving that.
Guys, you know, watch The Lighthouse.
Yes. To conclude our show about masculinity, watch The Lighthouse. Anyway, keep those thoughts coming. If you have a favorite male actor in particular that we just failed to mention today, we somehow overlooked, there are a lot of them, you can still WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can write to us at movies@bfm.my and of course reach us as well on Instagram and Twitter at BFM Popcorn. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.